Hey guys, Justin here. The new Texas Method ebook is available on 70sbig.com after clicking on the store tab at the top of the page. Learn how to transition out of a linear progression, tweak volume and intensity for effective progress, and how to customize your program for various subgoals. Available at 70sbig.com. Now, enjoy your podcast.
Welcome to everyone to the 70s Big Podcast. Johnny Payne is back, and how you doing today?
I'm doing good, man. How about you?
We're going to talk about deadlift programming today because deadlift programming on the internet seems to be very structured and very very contained inside of a box, and it's more so dependent on the individual, and some people would say it's organic. So I want to talk today with Johnny Payne about deadlift programming. So we'll take a linear progression, for example. Most linear progressions have sets of five, or rather one top set of five, and it's progressed probably on a weekly basis. And then in your Grayskull linear progression, and that ebook is available on strengthvillain.com, it has someone going for reps on their deadlift sets, and it even has them warming up with the power clean. So
yeah,
talk about why going for reps is beneficial for a novice, and then limit their reps at some point because of recovery?
Basically, I mean, you know, when we're starting someone out from the very beginning, we're trying to, enforce good habits, teach good habits and all that kind of stuff on the lift. So the amount of repetitions that we do is not ultimately that important when we're just starting someone out. We want to make sure that they're doing the movement right and that sort of thing. So for a very, very beginner, I mean, they could do, 20 reps. It doesn't really matter. They're not going to be using loads that are god awful for their recovery anyway. You know what I mean? So that's just by default. They just got that mechanism built in. But basically, I mean, the way that we set it up, I mean, the one set to failure, basically, repping it out. I'm a firm believer in intensity. Particularly intensity over volume. I mean, it's a long debate in the volume versus intensity kind of thing. But I just, my backgrounds and the people that I've admired and the training methods that I've enjoyed over the years and had a lot of success with myself and others are largely intensity-based programs. Dorian Yates was a huge influence on me, both as a teenager and now still. Dante Trudell, who people know as Dog Crap, DC Training, that kind of stuff. All these things, the common thread is intensity. So it's all about pushing extremely, extremely hard. And, there's a degree of a novice, we've talked before, I don't generally use the classifications like that, rigidly as some, but the, there's a definite understanding that someone that's new to this can't generate the same intensity that someone who has a little bit of time under their belt. So they don't know enough about themselves as a lifter yet to really crank out the intensity. And that's understood, and that's fine, absolutely. The way that the linear progression type of thing is set up, the other lifts besides the deadlift have the two sets of five and then the rep max set. That's kind of, there's two sets of five in the beforehand. When you're getting 10 reps on the last set, those two sets of five are basically a heavy warm-up. Two heavy warm-ups. When you get down to where you're doing five reps on the last set, you basically have a three sets of five, like a sets across kind of stimulus, like you see in other programs, which is a very valuable thing for someone who's a beginner. Everyone knows that. So you have kind of the best of both worlds kind of happening. And people are learning how to be intense. They're learning how to push and have the rep maxes. They're not cutting their reps at an arbitrary number. They're not doing this sort of thing. And they do kind of have a little blanket or a safety cushion in front of that top set, which is the two sets of five beforehand. So they have a little bit of a volume safety net, right, because they can't push necessarily as hard as I'd like them to right out of the gate. They just don't know how yet, With your deadlift, though, one of the things that you see for most people that do some sort of programming for a beginner or novice, as people will say, will have one set of deadlifts. You know what I mean? Just because of the demands of the recovery, demands of the deadlift and that sort of thing. That's something that's kind of universally accepted and understood. But what I've found is that repping the deadlift out, it's not the same from an intensity standpoint as if you go in and you try and pull one rep max every week. You're going to get beat up, and CNS and all that kind of stuff isn't going to respond very well to that over time. But we've had, you know, very, very few problems that can't be solved using just the standard methods we use to fix them in repping the deadlift every week. The other thing is, I use the example all the time, is Justin, if you and I were to do a workout and we had we were going to squat, say, and, you know, we're going to put 225 on the bar and squat a couple sets of five. Well, that's not going to be a workout for either one of us. You know what I mean? It's not going to be enough to drive. It's not a stimulus for either one of us, put it that way. But if we put 225 on the bar and we just said, all right, let's, you know, you're going to go, then I'm going to go, or vice versa, we're just going to squat this thing as many times as we can. It might not be the most efficient or the most intelligent thing to do from a training standpoint, but I'll be damned if we're not going to get a stimulus from that. Right?
Sure.
We squat that as many times as we possibly can. I'm not suggesting anyone go do this as their default training method. But, you know, just more reps with a fixed weight will make you stronger. So we kind of use that idea, too, in training the beginner or someone with the deadlift. Because the thing is you know, if especially someone reading a program on the Internet, if someone says, okay, I'm going to start at, you know, X amount of weight, well, they may be starting at a weight that does not represent a stimulus for them. And we see this a lot on the Internet, you know, such and such a program, and these are the numbers I'm going to start with. And I know, looking at these numbers, you know, I like the fact that the people are starting light. And they'll say, you know, I'm starting light because I want to really focus on my technique. And that's great, because that should be the focus. However, you don't need to wait 5-6 weeks into the program before you start getting to loads that are actually representing a stimulus for you. You know,
sure.
So even if you're using that lighter weight, but you're just repping it out, you're going to get a stimulus. You're going to get basically your optimal stimulus with that weight each workout. Because, you know, that's, you're doing what you can do. You know, you can't do more than you can do, obviously. So it's kind of a self-regulating thing based on, you know, how many reps you're able to get that day.
That seems to be the thing that drives, well, it is the thing that drives the progress in, I guess we'll just refer to them, just the people using the linear progression, because they may or may not necessarily be hardline novice, or it's a gray area anyway.
Right. No, absolutely.
People take that distinction a little too concrete.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And, but that's, it makes sense that if someone, for whatever reason, whether they need to or not, limiting the amount of weight they have, then the reps present that stimulus in the example that you gave about the 225 squatting for you and I. So
yeah.
Mm-hmm. When someone is getting, let's say, to their extent of the ability to recover from a week's worth of training on, let's say, the grade school linear progression in this example,
mm-hmm.
and they're getting to the point where they're handling heavier poundages, let's say that a 185-pound guy is pulling 365 for max reps, and he's getting, you know, he's getting around 8 to 12, let's say, and then it's becoming a problem for him to recover from that session for his next squat day, which is typically going to be on the Friday. So what would you kind of change in that situation as he's getting to that point of the limit of what he can recover from with reps?
Well, generally speaking, we'll start, we don't manipulate the rep range as much at that point. We're usually going to manipulate what lift he's doing. So we're going to start using a variant. And we're not going to use a variant that's going to enable him to move more weight. So we're not going to go, okay, well, we're going to take him off of the deadlift right now, and we're going to have him do a heavy rack pull just above the knee instead, right? I mean, that's going to kind of defeat the purpose, because now he's going to be working himself harder. He's not going to be taking it easier. It's going to be much harder. So,
right.
What we'll do is we'll use a lift that provides some sort of a disadvantage, whether it's a mechanical disadvantage or otherwise, to limit what he's able to do. We'll let him get strong, him or her get strong, in another movement, which is going to have a direct carryover to, you know, I don't really like that term, but to the actual deadlift, if that's the goal, is to make the deadlift real heavy. Understand that most of the people that I work with want to be strong, you know, first and foremost. It's not about what they're going to do on a powerlifting total. But even if it is, I mean, like I say all the time, I'm not a powerlifting gym. We just have really strong people that go to meets and do really well because they're strong, you know.
Right.
But one of my favorite go-to exercises in that situation is going to be the deficit deadlift. I'm a big, big fan of the deficit deadlift. That's one of the first things we'll do. If you put somebody on a 3.5-inch box and have them pull, they're going to they're not going to be able to use as much weight as they could from the floor, obviously.
Right.
But that's so by default, that's going to reduce the workload on that person. And then what we'll do is we'll get them real, real strong in that movement. Okay. And then, you know, once they get up, it's not at all uncommon to see somebody get up to where they're moving the weight that they were using from the floor from the deficit. You know, but the thing is that that's been, you know, people talk about deloading a lot, you know, and that's serves as a deload, really, because you're taking, you know, you're taking a significant percentage off of the bar, and all the only difference is you're now moving it 3.5 inches farther. So,
sure, you're either having a reduction in load or a reduction in reps, which would be total work. So either way, the work or tonnage or whatever is being decreased. So would you, in this example, would you, you're essentially progressing this every week as you did the deadlift prior to this, you doing the deficit?
And honestly, the first step that we would do 9 times out of 10, we're not going to go wholesale over to the deficit. Usually what we'll do is we'll alternate. And one of the first steps, even before that, what we'll do is we'll have a heavier, we'll go to a rep range type style. So rather than doing the linear progression method where you're going to do just one set of to failure, you're still going to do a set to failure, but you're going to have a prescribed rep range. So what that means is this week you might do a 4 to 6, which means that I want you to get between, you're going to fail between 4 and 6 reps, and that's great. That's a heavy set, right? The following week, you're going to do an 8 to 12 rep set, right? So the following week, you're going to be exposed to a significantly lighter bar. Then the week after that, you're going to go to a 4 to 6 again, you know, and then maybe the fourth week you'll take off, you know, and then you'll go back to 8 to 12 when you resume, that sort of thing. So, I mean, like I say, there's a lot of ways of doing it, but that's
another way that has an obvious inherent decrease in whatever variable you want to talk about, but a decrease in total work or systemic or localized stress, because obviously the 8 to 12 rep range is going to be a lighter weight, and that person will kind of intuitively know that, or you and that person will figure it out together.
Exactly.
The weight that 4 to
exactly.
6 reps,
other
and
things
then
too. I mean, just like we deliberately, you know, we use straps. I like using straps. I'm a proponent of using straps, especially with the power building stuff. We hear people, obviously, a lot of people talk about straps being like the Antichrist somehow. You know,
the devil.
Straps are so it's. What I would say is that if, you know, they say, well, straps are no good because they take your grip out of the equation and this sort of a thing. Well, if we're trying to train our hamstrings and our glutes and our spinal erectors and our lats, all of those muscles are going to be significantly stronger than our grip, right? So if we put straps on, then we can train those things and we can hammer those things a hell of a lot harder than we can if we have the grip as a limiting factor. So exactly what people bitch about as far as why you don't want to use straps, that's why we do. So we kind of do it in the reverse if we're trying to make things, we're trying to like kind of deliberately deload things. And for example, I'll talk about Dante Trevelle. I mentioned him in one of the other, in the first podcasts we did, and as being a big influence on me. And those guys, those of you that don't know who he is, that's dog crap, Dante from DC Training. I remember reading a while back, he was talking about rack pulls. And the rack pulls, the application for rack pulls here is a little bit different than a lot of people are, might be used to them. They were like above the knee rack pulls for reps, for higher reps. And it's a method we use a lot for the power building stuff and just for building a big back and all that kind of thing. But he said that he had gotten up over 800 pounds on these, you know, and using straps and this and that. And so he stopped using straps, and then he stopped mixing his grip and was doing double overhand. So that took him down to only being able to do, you know, 600 to 700 pounds on the thing. And that the idea was that when he got up around 800 pounds that he started to feel his bicep tendons, you know what I mean? And he started to not like what he was feeling when he was doing this. And so
right.
He said he kind of got scared, and I think his exact words were like he wasn't going to tread in those waters anymore. So he limited himself He took the straps off and went double overhand only, which, you know, took him down to a meager 600 to 700 pounds on the rack pull for reps. But the idea was that he was limited in safety valve. And you can do that with any lift, with any kind of thing. If you put some kind of mechanical disadvantage into the movement, it's a built-in deload, it's a built-in safety mechanism.
That's a good principle. So to rehash that, a mechanical disadvantage at some point in the program can be more so than a deload, because it's like an active deload, because you're still training the structures in a similar way, but you're doing so with, a reduced load, but you're still putting them to the extent of what they're capable given that mechanical disadvantage
on that day, which is important. I think you hear the analogy all the time that each workout's just a brick in the wall, right? And that's absolutely true. But, I kind of like to inspect each brick before I put it in the wall and make sure it's the best brick possible.
Sure.
That's just the way that I look at it. You hit it on the head with that active. I like what you call that active deloading. And if Justin, you're real familiar with my stuff and my programming, that's something I'm real big on, even in the linear progression stuff. When we reset, our resets, we're making progress during, right? It's a reset isn't, we're going to go back and do, go through the motions of training and just, get rid of the accumulated fatigue and get back up to where we're making progress again. No, we're making progress day one of the reset. We're just making progress. We're shifting gears a little bit for that period in time. I would say the only thing you like to maintain is erections. That's it. There is no maintaining. We don't maintain. We maintain erections. Other than that, we make progress.
Well, it's important to note that when someone is resetting in, let's say, a linear progression of some sort, or even some, in quotes, more advanced style programming, a reset is psychologically is something that kind of sucks a lot of the time. And if there's a person that has some sort of anthropometrical issue or, anatomical abnormality that almost forces a reset because they can't maintain technique on the squat, or, they can't keep the bar from slipping on their shirt because they don't have like the upper back muscle to do so, then resetting constantly, especially when it's at that same threshold that, let's say some guy on the bench can't get over that 225-pound hump.
Right.
For whatever reason, and he's resetting 225, then, of course there's the reset mentality is that you're supposed to build back up slowly, but that can be sometimes a two-week process just to get back up where you were, maybe even longer. So psychologically and physically, it becomes irritating. So this technique of, I'll just sum it up, is active deloading, whether it's from mechanical disadvantage or slightly changing in the lift, then it's logical how it pays dividends for the person that still wants to actively train, still actively get stronger, still actively get their muscles bigger, but not do so with the same thing that hasn't been working before.
Yeah, absolutely. That's what we do. In the beginning, we manipulate the reps. We stick to the basic lifts and we manipulate the reps. Down the road, we manipulate the lift. We just swap the lift out for a different lift. Another example is using a top set with a barbell and a drop set with dumbbells, and then flip-flopping. So, for example, let's say we're going to do a 4 to 6 or 6 to 8 kind of a stimulus on a flat bench press. We're going to do a flat bench press for a 1 balls out set of 6, let's say, during this particular training cycle. Our drop set, we're going to do an 8 to 12 set with or even a 6 to 8, doesn't matter, whatever we're using for that example, with dumbbells on an incline after that. So we do the flat bench with the barbell, then we go to the incline dumbbells, okay? We do 1 set, basically, of each. But each set is the ball buster set, okay? Then what happens is when we get to where we can't make progress on that 6 to 8 or whatever we're doing on the flat bench, then what we'll do is we'll move to the incline bench for the barbell movement, and then the flat bench movement gets done with the dumbbells, okay? So what ends up happening is you get strong as shit with the flat bench for that period of time, and you're getting strong as shit and building muscle, obviously, at the same time with both. But you're getting strong as shit on the dumbbell movement on the incline. So now you're training the flat bench. You've built up the flat bench. You've built an ass load of strength with the flat bench that you're now going to use in that flat plane when you put dumbbells in your hand on the flat bench during the drop set of the next cycle, right? And then that cycle, you get, you go all the hypertrophy basically from the, what you're getting out of that, that longer set on the incline, right? Now you're going to the incline and you're going to build up strength on the incline so that when you go back to using the incline bench and put dumbbells in your hands, guess what? You're stronger. You're using heavier dumbbells. You're getting more growth, right? So that's just another way. I mean, it's, you're taking two lifts and basically taking an incline and a flat, a barbell and a pair of dumbbells and, you know, coming up with this, this kind of limitless amount of ways to train using those two things that keep you from stagnating. I mean, the basic principle of training, of strength training of any sort is, you know, you have to do something different than what you did last time. You know, you have to do a little bit more, whether it's more weight, more reps, something in order to progress. So that's my biggest, like, fanatical obsession is how to keep people progressing in something, you know, no matter how small of a progression it might be. And that's why, like, a lot of times it's just changing the lift altogether. You know, and it's really, really taboo to do a lot of dumbbell movements and things. You know, seated presses are considered taboo from a lot of people, you know, and I don't think they are at all. I mean, you know, I just had a female in my gym PR her press, her just regular, you know, standing press, PR'd her press by like 10 pounds after not doing anything but seated dumbbell presses for 6 weeks, you know, and it's just, she was not making progress on her standing press. So it's like, all right, well, let's do this for a while. You know, and it wasn't just something I pulled out of my ass. Obviously we've done this before, but just for a for instance kind of a thing, you know, someone say, oh, see the dumbbell presses, that doesn't do shit for your press. Well, you know, I disagree because it sure as hell did in that instance.
Right. I want to point out that basically the summary of what you've been talking about the past couple minutes is that where the goal is to get stronger, not to build up a specific lift. However, building up a specific lift may require getting stronger in something other than that lift.
Exactly.
So strength building or strength training isn't just, you know, squat, bench, dead. Even for a powerlifter, perhaps, but, you know, most of the time they're going to have to raise those lifts up. Strength training itself is getting the body strong and applying that into the lift in the case of a competitive lifter.
100% the case.
So you mentioned that given your flat barbell and incline dumbbell example, you mentioned, you know, on this cycle, you said that phrase. How long is a given cycle? Do you set a certain amount of time aside to try certain techniques on someone's program, or what's the range
I used to do that. I used to do the you know, arbitrary amount of time, and I don't anymore. I tell you, the cycle's over when you stop making progress.
I got you.
You know, so if someone's going to go 4 to 6 on the flat bench, and they're, you know, working 4 to 6, or 6 to 8 is more likely what we'd be doing. They're going to do 6 to 8 on the flat bench. If they get between 6 and 8 reps this week, then we're going to add weight. If they get 6 to 8 reps, you know, next week, we're going to add weight. We're going to keep adding weight. When they can't make 6 reps, you know, the first time they don't make their intended rep target and it's not because they had a bad day, then it's time to change. You know, that cycle's over. You know, time to go
right.
That kind of a thing. So
going back to the deadlift example, 4 to 6 reps and then obviously 8 to 12 reps, if that person isn't able to push their set of 4 to 6, then that's the cycle of alternating between those two methods is no longer efficient for that person given that time. So try something else. It makes sense.
Well, but here's another curveball for the mix. 4 to 6, if they can't make their 4 to 6, but they're still cruising on their 8 to 12, or even if they're, you know, I mean, they're going to be making progress on that. Let's say that they can't make their 4 to 6. At that point, rather than just saying, all right, we got to shift to a completely different method, we'll just replace their 4 to 6 with the deficit and let them keep doing an 8 to 12 from the floor the next week.
Okay. You know, it's almost like an active deload on an active deload.
Exactly. It's very difficult when people ask me, you know, for a kind of a default kind of templated kind of a deal. I do very little like that. You know, there's so much. I know, Justin, you and I have said about programming, it's much more art than it is science. You know what I mean? So
sure.
At least, you know, that's the way I feel about it. So it's there are very few kind of set in stone guidelines. You know, it's just based on what you see happening and you know, obviously applying what you've seen work with other people that had similar situations. And sometimes you're way, way off. You know what I mean? Sometimes you do something and it's like, all right, that didn't work. You know, and that's happened to me, you know, numerous times.
That's where the experience of programming for people comes in, because if you try a set method, let's say 4 to 6, 8 to 12, that kind of alternate training method, and you try that on a bunch of people, and you can find some commonalities among those people in their training, and if it's working for the majority of people, then it might be something you try, you know, the majority of the time given a certain amount of circumstances. But that's what
exactly
stealing from other coaches does. I know you and I have been influenced by certain coaches, and you probably can't even point to just one guy, you know, like kind of melded into this method of programming that is still, you know, paving the way for increased progress in strength and size. Got one last question. You were talking, you know, all these different methods. We have, you know, the mechanical disadvantage. We have the rep targets. We have even alternating types of exercises in the case of the flat barbell, incline dumbbell. What's the training frequency for? Are they hitting that up, you know, twice a week? Are they hitting that up once a week? Maybe it's obviously different for different lifts. How many times a week are your people training when they're going through different methods like this?
I mean, it really depends on where they are in terms of their adaptation, you know, with their level of advancement, so to say. Beginners are going to train most things. I mean, if you look at most beginners are going to be doing that graceful LP kind of a thing. So, you know, they're squatting and twice a week. They're bench pressing and pressing either once a week or twice a week, depending on how the week falls. And they're deadlifting once a week always. So you can see a trend that the frequency is less than, you know, some. Okay, we get some programs that run people on are going to do basically each lift, or, you know, some representative of each, you know, anything, squat, bench, deadlift, press, some variation of that once a week. You know, and that's more common than not. If we're growing someone and it's, you know, power building stuff, they might have an AB. You know, where they have just an AB workout, in which case they're going to do. But at that point, if you're doing an AB where the frequency is going to be high, and this is another variable, is that's where we'll really start rotating the lifts, because we might have 2 days where they're doing a squat, but if they're in a commercial gym, they might be squatting a high rep set on Monday, and then on Friday they're in there, but they're doing a hack machine for an 8 to 12. You know what I mean? Something like that. So, and this, that would fall into the power building type of thing. So, the frequency really depends. I mean, when I say the majority, it's real difficult because there's a lot of people. You know, once a week is definitely, doable. You know what I mean? I mean, me personally at this point, that's the way that I train. I mean, I hit my lifts once a week. Train 3 days a week. A lot of people I have doing that, you know. If we're trying to grow someone, we're trying to get as many growth cycles as possible in the shortest period of time. We want to get as many effective growth stimuli as possible. So we don't bury somebody in volume, you know. We train very intensely, and we train as frequently as our recovery will allow, you know. So, I mean, training frequency is another aspect that has a lot of variables, you know.
Sure.
But it's not, you know, I don't have where you have to train at least this many days a week or you can't get progress or that sort of a thing. Or no. I mean, a lot of people are training, lift weights twice a week and make phenomenal progress. So
basically it's always dependent on someone's current state of adaptation, what it is
really
they're trying to do, and then what it is they have been doing, because then if you know all that shit, then you can figure out where you can try and stimulate them in order to get the progress that they're wanting or that they need.
Exactly.
And that's programming, and it's in a nutshell, but it's not easy to do unless you know all that information and think about it in terms of that all the time. So
yeah, you gotta kind of have a knack for it too. You know, I mean, you definitely do. And you know, I like to think that I do, obviously, and whatnot, but you definitely have to have a creative eye, you know what I mean, when it comes to that sort of thing. And it's gotta mean something to you. You know what I mean? It's gotta be something you're interested in. Otherwise, you're gonna just pull some cookie cutter programs off the internet and say, all right, I'm gonna have you do this today, and we're gonna do this, and or you just make up a bunch of shit every day and tell your people to do that. And, I think there's a whole army of gyms out there that do that. They have some common name, I think, that they use, where they just make up a bunch of random shit under the guise that there's some bigger plan. But we'll save that for another discussion.
Well, this was a very good discussion. I hope it helps a lot of the listeners. And once again, thanks for coming on the podcast.
No problem, man. Anytime. Having fun, so let me know.
If you guys are wanting to get some materials that might enhance your programming or just give you ideas on how to just train in general, Johnny Payne's got his Grayskull Linear Progression up on strengthzone.com. There's also the 50 conditioning workouts for the, what is it, Modern Viking Warrior? Is that what it is?
50 Grayskull approved conditioning workouts for the Modern Viking.
Yeah, a fucking handful. It's just 50 conditioning workouts. It's an ebook. It's on Strength Villain. And then, of course, there is what I've just summarized as the Texas Method ebook on 70sbig.com. And that's just talking about a very broad way of programming some weekly-based stuff for strength training. So thanks for coming on the podcast, and we'll see you next time, JP.
All right, man. I had fun.